Right. Well, thank you for tuning in to our roundtable video podcast.
Now they can actually see that we actually do have a round table.
And you know what? We did this last week, this round table, like the video, and we had like 50 views. I'm like, 50
know,
people wanted to watch
our
ugly
mothers.
Like, hi, who Mom. Wants to look at this for 45 minutes? But yes, welcome. If you know, you're either just listening on the podcast or watching, welcome. We said last week when we answered the Hot Seat Sunday questions, hey, we've got a question for this week. So it's actually from my sister. So there you go. She had texted me and said, can you do a podcast explaining who is this Melchizedek guy? So the title of this podcast is, what is up with Melchizedek? And so some of you are like, who on earth are you talking about? So we want to get into that because it's kind of an interesting, honestly, you can kind of scratch your head and go, okay, well, what is up with this guy? Like, what is the deal? So we're going to dive into that and go, what is the significance of this character in the Bible who comes up in a couple different places? Mm-hmm. So Melchizedek comes up in Genesis 14, and then he comes up again in Psalm 110, mm-hmm. and then in the book of Hebrews. So why don't I just read the Genesis 14 passage where he's mentioned, and then we'll kind of go from there. Because, yeah, it's just an interesting person. When you do some digging into it, it kind of goes, man, that's cool. There's got to be a reason that Melchizedek is mentioned. It can't just be like, whoops, he's not important. So in Genesis 14, and I'm not going to read all of it. I'm going to read the part about this guy. But specifically, if you read, all of 14, you'll know that, you know, Lot and Abram, they've kind of separated ways. Lot gets captured. There's this battle between, you know, five kings on this side, four kings on this side, and there's this battle, and then Abraham rescues Lot, and you know, we're told that they fight back, and they bring back all the possessions, all the kingsmen, Lot with his possessions and the women and the people. So Abram rescues Lot, and then there's this interesting where it picks up in verse 17. It says, after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer.
Give it your best shot.
Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Sheva, that is the king's valley. So here's where we're introduced to this person. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. And then in parentheses it says, he was priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram by God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything. And then that's kind of it. So what's really fascinating is that you have this battle happen, and Abram comes back and returns all these possessions, and you know, he meets this the kings in this valley, we're told, and then all of a sudden in verse 18 it's like, and this guy Melchizedek, king of Salem, brings out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High. He blesses Abram. Abram gives him a tenth, like a tithe, and then that's it. It's kind of like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then in Psalm 110, and we'll get to the Hebrews passage in a minute, but in Psalm 110, this is a psalm written by David. And, you know, he starts, the Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. The Lord sends forth from Zion your mighty scepter. Rule in the midst of your enemies. Your people will offer themselves freely on the day of your power in holy garments. From the womb of the morning, the dew of your youth will be yours. The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So there he is again. He's mentioned. David is writing this psalm saying, you're a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Yeah. So, Don, the million-dollar question.
Who is this guy?
And we'll get into the Hebrews passage as well, because that kind of, but I don't know, some initial thoughts, like, what's going on here? What comes to your mind?
Well, just a very mysterious person that we're introduced to with so little detail, and then he's a priest of God. He blesses Abraham, and Abram at the time gives him 10% of everything. Like, so he acknowledges that this is a great person.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, this messianic psalm in Psalm 110, and actually Jesus quotes that.
Yes.
It was in Matthew 24. Mm-hmm. So Jesus is actually, you know, quoting this psalm. So I don't know, like... it's just very fascinating because this person is a priest of God. So I always often thought that, well, Abram was the only one that was even maybe seeking God because God actually specifically called him.
Yeah.
But now there's this priest of God that was obviously well known by Abram and the people around there that Abram would even give him a tithe. So initial thoughts are very mysterious. Like,
yeah,
who
right.
is this person? Because a little bit later, Abram does have a visit from three people, and two are angels, and one is usually perceived to be Christ.
Yes, right.
In a pre-incarnate form. So some people have thought, is Melchizedek the same person?
Mm.
Or who is he? Because as we'll look later, Christ is in the line of Melchizedek.
Yep.
So I don't know, that's my initial thoughts, mystery.
Shrouded in
and
mystery.
And Jesus, he refers to that psalm which says he'll be in the order of Melchizedek. God swears Jesus will be in the order of Melchizedek. Yeah. So this guy is obviously someone, I guess, great, you want to call it, but yet we have two lines.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, because some people could say, like, well, maybe he's just a guy that, I mean, there's lots of names that, you know, we don't know anything else about them.
Yeah.
But there's something significant, like you said, because, and we'll get to the Hebrews 7, too, but, so some of my initial thoughts that make it kind of interesting, we're not told about Melchizedek's beginning or his death, like his birth or his death. And especially in Genesis, it's really interesting because it's all about genealogies, where you came from.
Very important.
And so-and-so begat him, and he begat him, and he was the father of him. Mm. And then you have a guy like Melchizedek who just shows up, and we're not told, you know, Melchizedek was the son of blah, 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 and he lived this long. He's just, it's just kind of, he's there all of a sudden with no fore story is not a word. No, like story of like his upbringing or anything like that.
No,
and then there's no, then he's gone. He just kind of disappears from the story. Now, a couple of initial things are really cool. Melchizedek, we're told that he's the king of Salem and he's the priest of Most High God. Now, it's really interesting because according to the law of Moses, so I was trying to piece these together because David is writing Psalm 110, and he mentions Melchizedek.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that each king, because in Deuteronomy 17, each new king, the law was that he wrote out the Pentateuch. He made a copy of the law for himself, and then God instructed each king, you're supposed to read that so that you follow God's law. Mm-hmm. So David would have written out the Pentateuch, because we know that, he would have done that. That was the law. So David would have read this story of Melchizedek, this king who was also a priest. Now, the other interesting thing is that also in the law, a priest could not be king, and a king could not be priest. You weren't allowed to have one person, be both of those things. And one of the commentaries I was reading, it was, think about Saul. Why was God so angry with Saul, the first king of Israel, and he says, I'm actually removing, I'm giving it to somebody else. Well, the reason is that he offered sacrifices, He didn't wait for Samuel to come and offer sacrifices. He said, I'm just going to do it. So there you see the priest-king He was maybe going, I can do what the priest does. I'll do it. I'll offer sacrifice.
I'm the king, anointed by God.
And God says, nope, you're not king anymore. So it was serious. Like God, the law was, you can't be king and priest.
Yeah.
So can you imagine then David writing Psalm 110, and we can safely assume that he knew the story in Genesis, and he goes, well, wait a second. Here's this king who is a priest, but that's not allowed. Like, we're not allowed to have, and yet we have this example where you go, okay, there's this Melchizedek guy who is the king of Salem, and he's also a priest. And so then David writes this messianic psalm, this psalm describing Jesus, and he says, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So it's almost like David is going, hey, you know what? There's going to be a day when, just like Melchizedek, there's going to be another person who is both priest and king.
Wow.
And that's the Messiah. And this, and I love that it's, you know, specifically after the order of Melchizedek, not, you know, you're a priest forever after the order of Levi, or after the order of Aaron, right? Because that just wasn't allowed. But hey, there's this example of Melchizedek. He was a priest and a king. So maybe there's going to be someone who comes after the order of this guy. So it was just kind of neat going, man, that's cool that David is writing this psalm and inspired by the Holy Spirit, looking forward. And this would have been, and I wrote it down, like this would have been 1,000 years before Jesus.
Wow.
And he's looking back 500 years before the law was given, at this example of Melchizedek, and then the law is given, and David's going, there's going to be another priest king in 1,000 years. And here comes Jesus.
Wow.
So then if you go to Hebrews.
Interesting.
Hebrews 7 is, I mean, Melchizedek's brought up a couple times in Hebrews, but Hebrews 7 is kind of where he's, I don't know.
6 and 7?
Yeah, and Hebrews 7, it says, if you start, it says, this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, so there's that king-priest again, met Abraham, returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, and to Abraham apportioned a tenth part of everything. He is first, by translation of his name, King of Righteousness, and then he is also King of Salem, that is, King of Peace. He is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God. He continues a priest forever. So you kind of see this, okay, and we talk about often that, you know, in the Old Testament there's these types and shadows and pointing forward to Jesus. And the author of Hebrews seems to make that connection, going, oh, yeah, okay, so there's Melchizedek. He's the king of righteousness. That's what his name means. He's the king of Salem, and Salem is the same consonants used as shalom, which means peace. He's without father or mother or genealogy, no beginning of days nor end of life. And we kind of go, yeah, that's interesting that none of that is mentioned.
Yeah.
And why? Well, he's resembling. He's this... this type, this shadow of the Son of God. Doesn't that just blow your mind? And then you keep reading, and he goes, see how great this man was to whom Abraham the patriarch gave a tenth of the spoils. And those descendants of Levi who received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to take tithes from the people, that is, from their brothers, though these also are descended from Abraham. But this man who does not have his descent from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who have the promises. It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. In the one case, tithes are received by mortal men, but in the other case, by one of whom it is testified that he lives. One might even say that Levi himself, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestors. That's a fun picture. When Melchizedek met him. So this idea of like the greatness of this person that we have, Abraham paid a tithe, and then he's, what the writer of Hebrews is doing is, you know, the people would pay tithes to the priests. That was the command. And so kind of making that connection, And then I just love that you move into Jesus is compared to Melchizedek. If perfection had been attainable through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need would there have been for another priest to arise after the order of Melchizedek, rather than one named after the order of Aaron? So he's saying, like, if we could actually be perfect through the priesthood, we wouldn't need this other priestly line. We wouldn't need someone to come after Melchizedek. And he says, when there's a change in the priesthood, there's necessarily a change in the law as well. For the one of whom these things are spoken belonged to another tribe, from which no one has ever served at the altar. It's evident that our Lord was descended from Judah. And in connection with that tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. So we go, Jesus didn't come from the line of Levi. He came from Judah. This becomes even more evident when another priest arises in the likeness of Melchizedek, who has become a priest, not on the basis of a legal requirement concerning bodily descent, but by the power of an indestructible life. And then Hebrews quotes Psalm 110. It is witnessed of him, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. From the one hand, a former commandment is set aside because of its weakness and uselessness.
Weak and useless.
Yeah, right? For the law made nothing perfect. But on the other hand, a better hope is introduced through which we draw near to God. And then it says this, going down a little, this makes Jesus the guarantor of a better covenant.
Wow.
So it's interesting that you can kind of see throughout these different places in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, you have 500 years before the law is given, you have this Melchizedek king priest show up for two verses, and then he's gone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 1,000 years before Jesus come, David seemingly is reading the Pentateuch and going, man, priest kings aren't allowed, but here's a priest king. And he's not in the family of Levi. He's...
Yeah.
And maybe there's going to be another one coming. And then,
well,
and
even like David, is God told him he would never fail to have someone on the throne. So he knew from his line there would be somebody always on the throne. And now this someone could also be the priest or this in the line of Melchizedek. So David's mind must have just been going like, wow, what is happening?
Yeah, right?
This is amazing.
And then, this amazing, the writer of Hebrews, I don't know, pieces this together and for us. And he's talking about Jesus, you know, even later on, he holds his priesthood permanently because Jesus continues forever. He's able to save to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him. And then I love how it ends. It was indeed fitting that we should have such a high priest, holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, exalted above the heavens. He has no need to offer sacrifices daily, first for his own sins and then for other people, since he did this once for all when he offered up himself. So you have this Jesus who is not only the king, right, in the line of David, but he's also a priest. But from, you know, in the same order of Melchizedek. So, I mean, that is just, I don't know, that makes me excited. That's
it
cool.
Does. Yeah, it's very exciting to read that. I mean, just, reading that again, that Jesus lives forever. He's always there interceding for us. And it was an oath from his Father that he would be a priest forever. So that gives us assurance and great encouragement that we have a high priest who is always interceding for us, working on our behalf in the very presence of God for eternity. And so, that is mind-blowing, but so encouraging that we have this high priest that's not in the line of the human beings, because they had to sacrifice for themselves first. And Jesus did not have to do that.
So I mean the question of like, you know, who is this guy and what is the point of including him in a seemingly random way?
Yeah.
So I think it's because, you know, we talk about that everything in the Bible points to Jesus. And so even early on, I mean, early on, just 14 chapters in of this grand story of God and his redemption, you have this seemingly random, which yeah. I don't, it's not random. You have this figure show up who is a priest and a king and a man, you know, a priest of the Most High God, and Abram pays him honor and respect. And so you have this early on, this type and this shadow of Jesus. And then, yeah, we know that even David is great king, but he was just a type and a mm-hmm. shadow pointing to an even yeah. greater king. And then you think about the whole, like everything about the priestly system was a pointer to, and that's what Hebrews is saying, like the Levitical priesthood could never do what Jesus mm-hmm. accomplished. So it was just a pointer. And then, you know, Jesus is, the temple was a pointer to Jesus. The lamb was a pointer to Jesus. He is the priest and the sacrifice. Like it's just amazing that all of these whatever systems and structures and people in the Old Testament, it was all pointing mm-hmm. to.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Hebrews. It was written to the Israelites, the Hebrew believers, and here he establishes that Jesus is greater than Moses,
yeah,
greater than Abraham, and then this person who was greater than Abraham, Melchizedek, Jesus is greater than him. Yeah. And the temple, like everything the Israelites held dear and high, like Jesus blew that all away.
Yeah.
And so he's establishing who this Jesus Messiah is.
Yeah.
And they're not waiting for a Messiah anymore. He came, and this is the one Jesus, or God said, he was coming.
Yeah.
And he would be in the line of Melchizedek, a high priest forever.
Yeah.
Perfect, spotless, who would be able to come into the very presence of God, just not a man-made temple, like yeah. the presence of God. So, but yeah, in the end, who's that guy? Who's Melchizedek? Because we have lots of description of Moses, Abraham, but Melchizedek is kind of shrouded in mystery.
Yeah,
which is kind of too bad because a lot of people have abused that,
sure.
Including Mormons, who like their whole leadership is based on the line of Melchizedek.
Right.
So they're given this authority and power, but because it's so mysterious, well, who says it's not that way?
Yeah.
Well, we're pretty sure it's not what he was intending.
Yeah. So I mean, you don't want to with something like that, like you said, read too much. Oh, let's try and like come up with some.
Well, the natural questions are, is that a type, was that Christ
right.
in the Old Testament, or was it just a type pointing to Christ?
Yeah.
So I know that's kind of where the debate
yeah.
comes, and people argue that, yeah, was Jesus pre-incarnate, or no, it was a type.
Yeah.
But even that is kind of interesting, because he had no end, no beginning, like, was he human then? Because could any human actually do that?
Yeah, right.
So, but
yeah, and so I don't think yeah. If you're wanting like all the definitive answers, I think there yeah there is two camps. This could very well could be a pre-incarnate Jesus who appeared in the Old Testament to Abram. It could
yeah.
it could, but then it also could because it, you know, someone who comes in the order of Melchizedek. So, okay, well, if it was Jesus, why would they say yeah. he comes from yeah. that? So, I mean, yeah, I think the main thing that, you know, as I was trying to think of like an application or like, well, who cares? I think the application is, one, you see incredible unity throughout the entire Bible
mm-hmm.
of It's not just there as a random, like, well, maybe just as Moses was writing Genesis, I'm just going to throw this in, Melchizedek. That's a cool guy. Let's throw him in for two verses. No, I mean, everything in the Old Testament serves a purpose. It's mm-hmm. it's revealing who this God is, and also this plan of redemption through his son. So it serves a purpose.
Yeah.
And so for me, it just went, man, that's awesome to mm-hmm. see 500 years before the law, 1,000 years before Jesus, they're all pointing to
yeah.
the Messiah who was going to come. And then, yeah, I guess the other point of application is, I mean, we have a great high priest who is also our king, who is also, right, prophet, priest, king. All
yeah.
those, you look at the three main roles in the Old Testament, you have the king, he had the priest, and he had the prophet. And it's all three of those are fulfilled
in Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's Amazing.
So you go, we don't need a priest, and that's the whole point of Hebrews 7. We don't need someone who's going to go in and make sacrifices for their own sin and then make sacrifices for our sin. I mean, Jesus did that. We don't need an earthly king. We have Jesus. We don't need, and this is where we might get in trouble, we don't need prophets because Jesus is the final prophet. Mm-hmm. We don't need an Elijah to show up and go, hey, thus says the Lord. Well, Jesus already did that. He fulfilled that.
Well, that's what Hebrews says in chapter 1, that he spoke finally through his son.
Yeah.
And so we do have the final word.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, that's the greatest takeaway is just, man, Jesus fulfills all of that. Mm-hmm. And so it should lead us to just be thankful and grateful and worship God for how he orchestrated this. So so hopefully that answered your question, sis. And I know I've had that comment from other people too, like, who is this guy?
I've had that too. Who's this Melchizedek guy?
Yeah, so hopefully that clears up, and not in the sense of like, well, there's no more mystery, because I think there is.
Oh, there is, yeah.
And I it's one of those that I think... maybe when we get to heaven or when Jesus returns, it'll finally go like, oh man, that's who that is. That's awesome. So, but hopefully that cleared up some confusion and why it's important. And so, yeah, if you do have other questions about, I don't know, tough things or just practical discipleship type questions, please let us know. You can email us or call us. And that's why we want to do these podcasts. So we will wait for the next question.